What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the True Shot Guest Spot Podcast, episode number 39. In this episode, I have Michael Felker, the vocalist for the metalcore band Convictions. And this was, honestly, usually these are pretty lighthearted, and there were definitely some lighthearted moments in this podcast, but we really talked a lot about some pretty serious topics, and I think that is good, considering the material that Convictions wrote about on their most recent EP, I Won't Survive. So I'll let you enjoy the episode, and hopefully you guys take away some things from this one. I think it's a very thoughtful, and Michael, just a very intelligent, bright guy who has a lot of really great things to say. So without further ado, let's get into this episode with Michael Felker of Convictions.
Through our suffering, we are all connected!
Oh, Mike Felker, what's up, man? How you doing?
Welcome. Good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm stoked to talk to you, man. It's really cool when we were able to cross paths again with people that we've played with in the past. Cause back then we played with you guys back in 2019 and we were just another local band, but it was back in 2019 when you guys toured with O Sleeper. And
oh, nice.
We opened for you guys at the Bungalow in Manchester, New Hampshire. Not sure nice. If you remember that venue or not. A little hole in the wall, no longer in commission anymore, but yeah, not sure if you remember that or not.
What did the venue look like? I just needed like some little trigger,
not pretty, I'll say that. But it was like a probably doesn't narrow it down at all.
Every venue, okay.
Yeah, right. But all right, so it's like I'm trying to visualize it. So from the stage, like if you're on the stage, there was like this really hideous carpet on the floor, and then you look out from the crowd, and there's like the sound booth to the left. Very small area in front, and then there's the bar. Like if you're looking diagonally to the right, there was like this like half wall that was there, and like this little small area where all the merch was set up. It's a tough place to kind of like explain because there's a whole lot going on there. But either way though, it was a really small, compact venue. And it was cool to open for you guys. I know that was with Famous Last Words as well, and also O Sleeper. So that was, it's just really cool to reconnect, even though it seems like an eternity ago that all that went down, especially after the past year and everything that's gone on.
Right. Yeah. I think the last we toured was right when the pandemic like hit.
Right.
So it was like really, it feels like a lifetime ago because it was like since then I've been doing nothing but like working like, normal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm on third shifts, but so it's not 9 to 5, but I'm working, like anybody else. And like I do really intensive labor for FedEx. So it's just like time is like double in length.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it just feels like it was so long ago, but in reality, it was like maybe a year or a little more than a year now. So,
yeah. How did they rope you into the third shift, man? How did that happen? Was that voluntary, or did they dupe you into that?
Kind of both. I'm more of a night person anyway. Okay. I've had a lot of experience working nights where my earlier years I was a private investigator, so I would work like security.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, wow.
I'm used to nights, and I actually work with my dad. He's an area manager. And then I have my brother-in-law. He's a manager. My brother, he works in like the office there. And then my other brother works there too. So it's just like his family thing, and we all work thirds. So it's pretty cool.
Well, I mean, listen, after, I know Bill Gates and his wife split up, maybe you can be the PI for one of them. You can follow the other one around. Maybe they'll give you a call.
For Bill Gates, yeah. I might have to cash in that metalcore money.
Just like, listen, this was fun while it lasted, but
low key.
Yeah. But look at this, man. You got quite the mood setting in the back.
Yeah, you see how I hit the light there?
Now it's like that.
YouTube-y.
Yeah, you should. You're going to start a reaction channel now, bro.
I want to. That'd be cool.
Yeah, you got the light. Look at that. I really like that because I know that we were talking about the poster in the background before. That's a really cool poster. Look at that. You got the looks like that light bulb there. Those two blue light bulbs. Is that the one with like the little remotes?
Yeah, I used to have a bunch of the Philips ones, but I'm not a tech guy, so like it was way too hard to keep up with, and
yeah,
I ended up ditching that. So these are just the Mercury lights from Walmart. So
cool.
Yeah, 12 bucks or so, and you can. Yeah.
Hey, it's I got this little ring light right here,
and
it was like 20 bucks at Walmart. I was just like, yeah, I could use this. Sure.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah. Mine's TJ Maxx.
Listen, it doesn't take much people to set up a nice little YouTube area. I mean, look at Mike's setup here. Way more professional than mine. I got my girlfriend's Jumanji plants here in the background. This I got a small forest brewing over here.
Yeah, you got to get the foliage.
Yeah, exactly. But listen, man, I'm stoked to talk to you, and I'll tell you why. Number one, obviously because we play with you guys. But number two, you guys just put out an EP that I was absolutely enamored with. And three, you consider yourself a Christian metalcore band. And I think that's really cool. And that's something that I have not had the privilege to talk to anybody about here on here before. So that's a really interesting perspective. And just, just from my upbringing and like some of the different, when I grew up, I had like this family that I spent a lot of time with who were very religious. And so it was a really strange dynamic where I grew up from the street from them, and my background, my mother passed away a few years ago from a heroin issue, and my dad, not really in the picture at all. So it was kind of like almost like, for the lack of a better phrase, heaven and hell in a way. It was very interesting. It was just a matter of three houses down, and you go from the house that I was living in, sleeping on the floor and not having a bedroom to go in down there where they're doing grace at the table every night. It was just a very jolting experience.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that I will love to dive in and talk to you about. But I just first thing with this EP, and cause usually I end up getting to the music later, but this EP, man, there's a lot going on here when I listen to it in terms of the content of the actual songs.
Yeah.
And then the one thing I want to ask you about that, because obviously with a new EP release, everybody's like, new EP, listen to it now. But like with this subject matter, especially with it being from interviews that you conducted, what has that kind of dynamic been like with wanting to market your product, but also kind of keeping in mind that this isn't like, cause usually like I know for me and probably for you in the past, you kind of write from personal experience. So you can kind of do whatever with that as you want, cause that's your experience and you can monetize or market that or whatever. But when it's someone else's experience, even though they're probably going to be like, okay with it, it's just, you're a little bit more like, oh, maybe, I don't know. Where's the line with that? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you really tapped into exactly what we're feeling and going through, or at least me, I can speak for. It's challenging for sure, because you're right, like I want to be stoked and be like, yo, you guys got a mosh to this, it's like super heavy, bro, like we're so stoked. And I have those feelings. I'm so proud and like really excited. This is the best thing I think I've ever done, like this is it. And yeah, it's super heavy. And I'm like, we have really good breakdowns. I'm really like, I want to sell you this. This is great. And it's like, but I am way more focused on the, advocate side of it, where it's like, I need to let that go, put that aside, and just kind of focus on the message. Cause we really want to try and speak out on, mental health and reaching people on that personal level. And it's touchy because you don't want to sound insensitive and you don't want to be, I don't want to take these stories and then exploit them in the wrong way, I guess. Even though we were given permission and the people that are involved are really great and they're super supportive and excited like we are, but I don't want to twist that and make it about hype and, you know, like it's tricky. I just want to be conscious of that when I'm, you know, talking about the music, and I want to be aware of it. And that's something I have to kind of keep in check. That's all. But, you know, we were given the green light from our, you know, the people that we've written these songs for and about, and for the most part. And it's just kind of like, yeah, like, you know, I at this point, I'm probably going in circles, but like, you know, you can kind of understand just the thought process. You're kind of going in circles and trying to, you know, be, you know, in the right place.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because I can definitely understand where it would be difficult to be like, our new single, The Price of Grace, out now everywhere. You know, it's just, it's a very, very emotionally just captivating, gripping song. And then it's, but you're also like, we're in a band and we want people to hear it, but we don't want to be. Yeah, I get that. And that's one of the first things that I kind of thought of, because I will say, man, just on a pure sonic level, which is goes back to this is the breakdowns, get ready to mosh, you know,
right?
Like on a pure sonic scale, like the lyrics take it another step for me in the subject matter behind it. But the, I mean, you saw my reaction to Teeth. I mean, I listened to that and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, Teeth is, as I would say, like probably the safest to kind of put the emotion aside, I guess, because it's more of like a recap. It's more about tying everything together through suffering. Like all these stories and events and people, we're all connected and we can all have that solace, you know, that comforting thought that we are connected through this. And from that idea, it was just playing with imagery with like hell and bits of Dante's Inferno, this book about the depths of hell. And so that one I think is a little like more moshable, but it still has substance, but it's not specific to one event. And I think I've seen some of the comments and reactions on that. There was people like, I feel conflicted. I don't want to exploit the subject matter just for the sake of headbanging or moshing. And I'm like, no, it's okay. You can do that. But some people are like, but Teeth is good. I can throw it out of that. So it's really up to who's listening and how they feel.
And I saw that you guys put up a post about what's your favorite track off of the EP. And a lot of people are saying Teeth, man. And I think that's what's one thing that's really cool is, number one, I mean, the track is just awesome. But number two, like you said, it's like the, I don't want to say like the least guilty to mosh to, you know what I mean? But it's like, it has like that intersection of like, this is heavy, I like it. And it's also not necessarily about someone's personal story or journey that you're writing, which I think is really cool. I don't know if that was purposeful on you guys' part, but.
It's kind of ironic because it's like the heaviest, probably the heaviest song. And it has probably the most positive message, maybe, or outlook.
Yeah.
So it's got a nice juxtaposition there. But yeah, I don't. It's one of the heavier ones. It's cool. It's cool to see that too. Like, you know, like you and I, like we probably want to keep playing heavy music, but there's that pressure from maybe our peers or maybe the mainstream, where it's like, well, we should be. Maybe like go more of a rock route and hit that radio market and appeal to everybody. But maybe you and I don't know about you, but I don't really necessarily want to do that. And, or maybe not do that all the time. Right. And hearing all these people like, no, Teeth for sure. It's like, oh, that's a good sign.
Well, I'll tell you right now, man, my favorite band is Immure. So I definitely like the heavy, you know, I that's why Teeth, I heard that and I was like, whoa. But no, man, I messaged, I think it was either, it might've been you on Instagram. And I was just like, man, like this is just some of, cause I, you know, we do a lot of reactions. We listen to a lot of music and at some points, a lot of the stuff can kind of just kind of go in one ear and out the other, so to speak. Okay. Just 'cause there's so much stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with you guys, I was like, man, like I haven't had that visceral of a reaction to especially like an EP, which is, you know, this was seven tracks with an instrumental in a long time, because I think right now, especially, I don't know about you, but I know for me, I'm more of a playlist kind of guy where I like to pick and choose, you know, a song here, a song there.
Yeah.
But with you guys, I was like, man, like every track is just bang, bang. And it was just, it was awesome.
Man, that's a really awesome compliment, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily if I'm a playlist guy. And I'm sure like a part of your job or so is like doing these reviews, you know, and hearing a lot of metal. Like I try not to do that. So I'm listening to like top 40 Justin Bieber, really? You know, like hip hop and radio and electronic. I try to have everything covered just so that when I come back to metal, it's fresh, you know? And I think that's important. You can't be that guy all the time. And if you know, it could be maybe almost ironically uninspiring if it's just all you're hearing is one sound. And so I try to stay away from metal as much as I can when it's time to write.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. No, that definitely makes a lot of sense. But what are like kind of like, you know, your metal bands that you're like, yeah, like these are my bands. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, the best band of all bands is Slipknot, of course, but
all right.
Well, Iowa and self-titled and a little bit of Subliminal Verses. That will take the throne for me, but I really, really like, if you're like in the scene, I would say, man, there's some good ones. My favorite would probably be Crystal Lake. Ooh, and okay. I really, really like Kublai Khan. So,
oh yeah,
those are like there's no, I feel like there's like nobody better at what they're doing than Crystal Lake. Like they're just, gosh, they're so good.
Yeah, man. And had the privilege to see them live when they came with August Burns Red on that tour. And man, the energy is just,
yeah,
it's like another level, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, that they are so good. Their vocalists, like everything about them.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's apex. It's incredible.
It is incredible. And they've been around for a long time, which a lot of people really, yeah, they've been around, I think, since like 2003 or so. They've been around for a while. Yeah. Yeah. They've been around for a long time. But no, Kublai Khan, though, I did not expect you to say that, because I love that band myself, but
yeah,
a lot of people may not, just because of, I don't know. I love Matt's vocals, though. It's just so raw and just to the point. Like, it's just no messing around. Like, here it is, raw, just pure, unadulterated, just boom.
Yeah, it's really stripped down. And that was one thing I got a lot of influence on with some, like Teeth, for sure. Kublai Khan influence on me. I guess the idea of like, if I'm going to be in like an argument, like with you, let's say, and I'm like, actually like you and I get physical, I mean, like, I'm actually going to like try and fight you or something. Like, what would my voice sound like? You know, like it wouldn't be like, you know, it would be, it would be like beefy and loud and brassy and like unhinged a bit.
It would be like Matt from Kublai Khan.
That's exactly
it. He always sounds like he's about to throw down, like at any given moment. It's just like, he's just going to fight like everybody. Yeah.
A scary older brother or something that's like about to kick in your door. And I was like, that sounds so honest and scary. And I was like, I want to borrow some of this, you know, and use my own flares and ideas. And it wasn't just Kublai Khan, of course, but like, so like that energy, you know, was really important, I think, for breaking through to that, almost breaking the fourth wall. And I'm just, at this point, I'm just yelling at you, you know, abandoning technique and just.
Well, yeah. So just, I was going to say that, just from, you know, myself doing vocals, just listening to your vocals on this EP, especially, they were very like raw. And I think that you did a really nice job of trying to channel those different like emotions across. And it wasn't like, you know, this like super, like maximize the low end, maximize the high end, 28 layers, like make it just sound like crisp and just perfectly produced. It was just like raw and just you felt it. And I thought that was awesome.
Thank you. So I try, you know, we're trying.
Yeah, no. And well, I mean, hey, listen, we can't not talk about, you know, you produced Andrew Wade. I mean,
yeah,
pretty unknown, you know, nobody really knows who he is. You know what I mean?
Oh my gosh.
Joking, of course. But like, go ahead.
I was just going to add to that. I had some funny, surreal moments because, you know, he's worked with the biggest people that you and I probably look up to in the metal course, or maybe even hard rock scene. Ghost Inside, Wage War, Day to Remember, you know, like big names. And I'm tracking my vocals and he's like, yeah, okay, this sounds good. Let's keep moving. You know, and like, it was kind of like this moment where I was like, but is it good? You know, like
imposter syndrome. Yes.
I was like, is it though? And he's like, yeah, like, I don't like, we need to keep moving. Like, this sounds great. Let's go. So I'm like, okay. Look, man, I was like, you've recorded John Vigil. I was like, is this good? And he was like, yes. I was like, wow. Like, and I just kind of let that soak in and like embarrass myself for a second. I was like, this dude, like, he hears the best screaming, you know, or like the best, you know, like,
well, yeah,
he knows. So if I'm good, then I must be really good, so let's go. You know, like, that's really, it was like a realization, humbling moment, I guess. It's really cool.
No, that is really cool. And so, like, how did that, I guess, kind of that dynamic work, you know, working with him? And, you know, he's been around the block a time or two, and these are obviously very you know, heavy songs, both sonically and emotionally. And you know, there's probably some elements of not like, you know, like, I'm trying to think of how to word it. Like, a lot of these songs probably didn't have like that natural, like, songwriting element to them, but maybe they did, you know what I mean? Like, it had some of like that. We really want to get this in here because this is the realness of the content of the song, rather than like, maybe we take this part out for the purposes of songwriting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was definitely a different approach, at least from what I'm used to.
Yeah.
Typically in a studio situation, you know, you got budget and time restraint. So it's just kind of like, take your demos and go. It's not always been like that for us, but typically, you know, it's just kind of, you know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. With these, like, we had demos and we had all the lyrics, at least mostly fleshed out and conceptualized. But for example, we have five to 7 days for one song or something. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, we're going to start drums. Maybe, you know, scratch guitars first day, drums maybe the same day or second day. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like people that record a lot, they might have this rhythm. And I was expecting that. But for this, it was totally different. Like, day one was just kind of like, let's sit down and let's talk about what we're writing about and what we want to do with it. And then from there, about 3 days or so, it was just conversations like this, just talking about the lyrics and what do they mean. And like, you know, everybody just kind of having that round table discussion and bouncing ideas and then fleshing it out. So like, everything that we wrote was very intentional, like, to the word, you know, is this the right word we want to use? Is this the right set? Like, everything was torn apart and put back together. And I think having that extra time was really, really beneficial for us. And I recommend that if you can take as much time as you can to really mean what you want to, you know, put your heart into everything, you know, instead of just kind of like, let's go, you know, if you can.
No, for sure. No. And that's really interesting. Cause, you know, for me personally, we're finally going to be going into a studio at the time of this recording anyway, next weekend for the very first time ever. Like I was telling you before we came on, I'm used to recording vocals in a child's playroom. You know what I mean? So, and then setting it off to be mixed and mastered and whatever. So I'm definitely looking forward to that environment. And it's going to be interesting because I'm used to, you know, just screaming in front of the other guys in the band versus, you know, in front of somebody else. I'm going to be like, is it good? It's all
right.
You know, but
right.
Yeah. But especially I can imagine with Andrew Wade, I mean, not taking anything away from the guy that we're going to spend time in the studio with, but somebody like Andrew Wade, who's, like you said, has been, I mean, you name the artist, it's probably a decent chance, you know? So I can understand that a little bit, maybe of imposter syndrome. Like, are you sure this is good? That was only one take. Are you sure that's good? You
right.
Do it again.
Yeah. No, I, it's, you know, it, I don't really know how much else to add to that. I mean, like, congrats to going to, you know, a new environment. And, I think you'll do well if you've had a lot of experience, it sounds like. And, you know, I've heard your music I was talking about earlier. It sounds great. So yeah, just do what you do and be confident and it'll be good.
Yeah.
I mean, and with Andrew, like, it wasn't like that. Like, he's like super down to earth and really cool and funny. And
yeah,
it didn't even really process most of the time. Like, it was just kind of like hanging out with a friend, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, listen, man, our music is no Slipknot self-titled. I mean, that right there's the crown.
No music.
No. But no, man. Okay. So I kind of want to back up a little bit because I came across a very interesting YouTube video involving you and I think your stepbrother. It's like a 4-minute little clip. And that was a very, I just thought that was a really cool clip because there was a couple things that I took from that short little video that I wouldn't have anticipated. And I guess one of them was, is that you were kind of, it sounded like, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong here, but it sounded like you had, you know, the Christian faith and then you kind of lost it for a little while and then found it again. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's, you're kind of blowing my mind right now because literally I just got off the phone with my brother, the guy in that interview or that, you know, that video. Wow. I like, that was like why I was 2 minutes late to your call because I was like, bro, I got to go, man. Like, I got to go. And I was like, we were talking about that video. That's really strange. Yeah, wow. That's weird. Very weird timing.
That is weird.
Wow.
Sorry, man. Sorry to blow your mind. I tried to do little bit of background stuff and I came across that. I'm like, this isn't like a podcast. This is interesting. Let me watch this.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, my brother, he's pastor at a church and he asked me he had actually seen me play with O Sleeper, same tour.
Oh, cool.
I think it kind of like inspired him to ask me a little bit more about what we're doing and why we're doing it and our outreach. And so yeah, my faith, going back to that, so I didn't grow up in a Christian home, like probably similar to your experience. Not that it was bad or anything. It wasn't until like my later teen years where my dad actually started taking us to church and I would show up in like Slipknot shirts and make a joke of it. I was like, this isn't for me. Right around like 19 or so, I abandoned the whole idea of God and I was very against it. In fact, I was like trying to argue with people against God. I'd be like, oh, like, well, these are reasons why I don't think God's real. Like, go ahead, let's debate. Like, I was like trying to debunk people's faith. It was really a goofy time for me.
Yeah.
But I did that with my brother. My brother was getting involved with his theology and, you know, getting serious about becoming a pastor eventually. And I remember the night when I sat with him in the car when we were both doing security and I just threw a bunch of questions at him and I expect he's very smart. So I expected him to fire back with like, oh, well, this and this. Mm-hmm. And he like was kind of stumped. And from that fueled him to dive way deeper into his theology and way deeper into finding answers to those hard to answer questions, you know, with God. And eventually he came back to me and presented this all to me. And it sat with me for a while and I was going through a really difficult transitional period in my life where I had suicidal tendencies and it was a very dark time. Mm. And so I eventually went towards God as like a last resort instead of like therapy or medication, things like that, which are great. But God was just kind of like my last straw. And so from there, being like a born again Christian and then eventually joining Convictions, everything just kind of had this divine timing, it felt like for me. And we kind of talked about that in our little interview that you watched. So I guess that hopefully answers some of what you're.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And I didn't mean to take you off guard. We get very deep here on the True Shot. Well, we get very deep here. We try to cover all the bases. And I just, like I said, I like to try to approach these from not only is your music awesome and it's great, But really knowing who you are and learning more about you, I that's what really interests me. And it's probably because I do have a journalism degree. I have a background in it. So that's very interesting to me. And I believe that everybody has a story to tell. And you definitely do. And I learned that from just a 4-minute clip or whatever.
That's cool.
Yeah. But no, man, I guess from there, you know, he kind of touched on something in that video that I thought when he said it, I was like, oh man, I gotta ask Mike that. I mean, if I don't, I mean, I have to. So he mentioned, you know, the fact that he, you know, has, you know, the standard kind of job with a family and stuff like that. And I wanted to ask you, because I have a 10-year-old son, but I often have this kind of thought where I'm like, man, is like trying to pursue music, like, is this like worth it? Like, should
like
I
a double just, life?
Yeah, it's very strange. It's like, should I just go like, you know, toward that, you know, standard kind of 9-to-5 with benefits, going to Disney World 2 weeks out of the, you know what I mean? Versus, you know, trying to have, you know, this type of very strange kind of lifestyle or whatever, while also having a child. But I guess for you, you know, kind of growing up and kind of seeing, you know, the path that you went with convictions, versus your brother who kind of went down the more, I guess you would call it more, like traditional route, I guess.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
What was that like? What was that like for you?
So Andy, my brother,
yeah,
he and I were actually in my first band together. Okay. Yeah. So he plays guitar and we were, that was my first band, my high school band. And, right about when that ended was like when our lives kind of, you know, he went dead traditional route and, you know, I stuck with music and I'm still doing it. And I'm with you, man. Like I'm 31. I'm living in this isn't my house. This is my brother's house. Yeah. I drive a beater. My car is like older than most of our fans. It's like a 97. I work at FedEx and I like, part-time, which is basically full-time now, and you know, I'm not married, I don't have kids, like I don't have a college degree, it's kind of like an all-in thing, and
right.
The older I get, the more it's kind of like, oh my gosh, like am I wasting my life for this, you know? But that's like a lie. Like I feel like that's the devil, like, because that's not why I'm doing it. Like I'm doing it hopefully to reach people and to have a positive impact on, you know, the people that listen to us. And that's why I want to do it. So the big question, like for you, isn't like, you know, is this worth it? Or am I making a mistake or something like that? The big question for you would be, well, why are you making music? Are you doing it just for the glory and to be cool and, you know, whatever, or is it something bigger? And that's what I hope to inspire in young musicians is like, what are you trying to do with this? You know, like, what do you want to accomplish? It shouldn't just be about, I don't think it should just be about like, I look sweet and I'm awesome and the glory and the chicks or, you know, like whatever, like it shouldn't be, you know, about something like that. You have an opportunity to do something great.
Yeah, no. And I definitely respect that. I think that's probably a thought that runs through a lot of people's heads, especially, you know, I'm 28. I know that you said that you're 31. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. Unfortunately, you know, we're all not like, you know, a day to remember who at, you know, 21 or whatever age they were are just like shot to the moon, commercially successful, immediately playing awesome music. And a lot of it is a huge grind. And I think that you guys, you guys as a band are the epitome of, I know you've been in the band since 2013. Is that right?
Yeah. Good journalism there.
yeah. So, but I mean, that's going on. I don't know exactly what month you joined. I didn't go that deep, but it's going on like 8 years. And
yeah,
I mean, I'm sure that you would probably had many moments along the way where you're just like, man, like, like if you write it down on paper, like without all of the, like the feeling behind it, you're like, what the heck am I doing? You know, but
yeah, it's, man, it definitely hits hard when you're like struggling, like on tour, for example, and maybe you've blown out your fourth tire on the same tour, or axle, or leaf spring, or whatever, you know, or you're down to your last like $100 and you're like, man, like I gotta eat more than just fast food. or you're playing a show and it's like there's like three people there, you know, like those are some of the like lower points where you're like, man, like I could be in bed and like in a cozy house and going to work the next day or whatever. But then it all comes back. It's like the next day you wake up and you're in Colorado and the show's doing really well. And there's people there that like want to share their, like Josh Riedenhauer, great, great fan. He was in Colorado. That was just came to me, and he has children and he has conviction tattoos, and we've impacted his life and made a positive difference on him. And he would come to our shows and bring his children in Colorado, and they would mosh, and they're little guys, and like, you know, like, and you're like, wow, like I'm making a difference, you know? And then you wake up and you see like the mountain range and you're like, this is beautiful. Like I could be, you know, in my beater car, like going to work and being cold, cause you know, and like, I'd be miserable, but I'm here. Like, this is kind of cool. You know, like those are some of those moments. Or it can get heavier, you know, like where someone may have a really deep, you know, like you got your guys' True Shots music changed my life, or it saved my life. You know, you get those stories and you're like, okay, I get it. Yeah. This is why I'm here. You know?
Yeah, man. No. And I think that that's awesome. And especially, you know, I am kind of interested though. I do want to back up because I know that you mentioned that your dad started taking you to church when you were, you know, kind of in your teen years. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, I guess, what inspired him to start bringing you into that? Was he into that, like going to church on his own before and then eventually introduced you into that? Or
I think so. So he didn't start taking us to church till like after my parents' divorce. So before that, I do have a few like faint memories of him going to like mass and stuff like that, because we had grown up across the street from this like big church, and I was always curious, like, what's going on over there? Like, there's like kids, cause it was a school. It was also school. And, you know, like mom, dad, like what's going on over there? Like, we should go there. Like some of my friends go there and they're like, you know, like, and I was like, okay. Like, but I was always like really interested in it. I think that like ironically made me more driven to go seek out God and what that's all about. But, when my parents split, yeah, those earlier years, my dad was taking us to Cedar Creek. That's our church we go to. Mm-hmm. And it definitely like sparked my curiosity a bit. And just seeing like the positive energy and the way people are carrying themselves is definitely probably my first moment of appeal, I guess. I was like, wow, like everybody, why is everybody so like happy? Like what's different about these people? I want to learn more. And then eventually like my brother getting involved, that helped a lot. And, yeah, I don't know, maybe it was my dad, was probably wanting to make a positive difference and show us, you know, like maybe he's changing or like he wants to influence us in a good way. So yeah, maybe that was it.
Like a kind of like a positive influence through what was probably a tough time with your parents divorcing.
You'd be
surrounded
so.
By a community of sorts. No, man. So I know I had you go deep there, so I just think it's very interesting, and I'll tell you why. So, as I mentioned a little bit before, I grew up. I moved about 30 different times as a kid, and
Yeah,
hotel rooms. You know, my mother went to prison when I was 6 years old. I lived with my dad. My dad left in the middle of the night when I was 10 years old, and I ended up growing up with my grandparents, both sets. You know, at one set of grandparents, I would sleep on the floor, sleep on the couch. I didn't have a bedroom or anything like that. And so at that one grandparent's house right down the street, there was this family, my friend James, who I was friends with since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. And I spent a lot of time down there, like to the point where like I would get punished there, and they would say that you could either go in timeout, like in the laundry room, or you could go home. And I would take the laundry room because I did not want to go home. Wow. And yeah. So they were very like, I wasn't used to one, like eating at a table for dinner at night or anything like that. But then to go from that to not only eating dinner at a table with these people, but also, you know, grace and like going around the table and discussing our days and stuff like that. It left a really interesting impression on me. And from there, you know, these are also people who would take my report cards and stuff like that and put them on their fridge. I mean, just very, just very like surreal. And they went to church. And so I went with them quite frequently when I was a kid to Sunday school. And we watched a lot of VeggieTales, ate a lot of vanilla, ate a lot of vanilla wafers, that kind of thing there. And I don't know, man. It's one of those things that like I often think about when it comes to faith, because I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily, you know, a Christian or anything like that, any kind of determination. But I often look at, you know, how my life, like the trajectory it went on, with how I grew up and everything. And not for nothing, you know, I was a really good student in school, very, very, very good student. And I often look back and I'm like, man, like, I don't know how I just wasn't like a total, just another kid in the world. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't like going down a bad path, I guess.
Right.
And, I don't know, man. I often think of like, maybe there's some kind of higher power or something that has, I don't know if it was like the life experiences lined up the correct way or what, but like something happened in my life that I attribute a lot of it to that family, I would say,
right,
why I didn't go down this really negative path that I was used to with my family. And it's quite, I don't know, man. So that's why, like, you know, I see it on social media every now and then about people, you know, kind of, you know, speaking down about faith and religion and denigrating it and whatnot. And it kind of irritates me. And it's not even because I'm Christian, but it's because I experienced something in life where I don't know what pulled me out of it necessarily. And the only thing I can think of is something greater than who I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's different for everybody for sure. And it's important to be conscious of that, but I appreciate you sharing that story. Like, that's really inspiring. You know, like you definitely had the recipe for being, you know, like a really maybe bad person or making bad mistakes.
Right.
It sounds like, and it's almost like God maybe wanted you. I can't speak. I'm not God, and I don't want to push anything on you, but it sounds like God maybe pulled you out of that so that you could share that foundation that was built for you, and then how you just changed it and turned it into something really great. I mean, you have like, it sounds like you're doing really well, and you speak well, and you're educated, and you have a kid, and you know, you're on your way. And, you know, like, it sounded almost like you would be like a Netflix documentary, like serial killer, or, you know, or like or maybe locked up somewhere or something, you know, and
right.
And you beat that. So that's inspiring, you know, and you should share that.
Yeah, no, man. And I just wanted to share that only because I asked you to share so much. And I think too, man, like I've always said to people as far as faith goes, and I'm not, you know, very educated on the subject, but the one thing that I've always found with faith is that even in its, I guess, like its simplest form, there's something to be said about when, you know, that same family that I was talking about, my friend James, his aunt, this was, you know, a little less than a decade ago, they had a 3-year-old daughter who died of brain cancer. And they're very religious, you know, and that community that they had really helped them get through what is just like, for a lot of people would just be an absolutely devastating life event. I mean, losing your child to brain. I mean, that's just
rightfully so.
Right. Exactly. But I think, you know, with their faith in their community, it really helped them get through that. And I think that there's something to be said about like how awesome that is. I mean, that's to me, that's really, I think when I think of faith, I'm like, it's, if not for anything, it's something that can really help you get through these really troubling experiences in life and give you a kind of a reason for it. And I, if I'm speaking out of school, feel free to shut me up, but that's,
no, yeah. No, it's really cool. Like hearing you, I guess, speak all that, which sounds so godly, is it's kind of incredible, because, you know, you kind of brought up how you're not a religious person, or maybe you don't follow Christ necessarily. Right. But ironically, we as Christians are, you know, we're taught to follow a God that represents love, and to spread that love, and to, you know, support one another with that love. And so many people get that wrong. And to hear somebody that isn't Christian doing that, it's kind of funny, you know, like,
yeah,
I think that's really cool and says a lot. And I think there's definitely something really special there. And I think that's a lot of like what we experience on the road. Not to go off on a different tangent, take away from what you're saying.
Go for it.
Go ahead. But a lot of people that we encounter are brought up in like harsh Christian, I'm gonna big quotes on Christian, harsh Christian environments where they don't experience that love, and that it's almost like badgering them on, you know, the littlest things, and just, you know, being so critical on them that it forces them away. And it's almost the opposite of love. You're you know, terrible to them. And I think that's really sad. And I think that's important for us to try and reach those, try and find those people, and to show that high level love to them, you know, like,
yeah,
to, you know, represent that. And that definitely gives me a lot of purpose in what we do. But it sounds like that family that you grew up with was doing that. And just, it sounds like they really knew God, and that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think about that a lot, man. It's pretty surreal. 'Cause, you know, I have a brother, and, you know, he's doing all right, but I wish that he had, you know, that kind of a family, you know, when he was kind of growing up, going through his youth, and he didn't. And, you know, he stuck by my mom's side, right up until the end, even, you know, like actually watched her pass away, which is, horrifying. But yeah, it's one of those things, man, that, that's why I was excited to talk to you. 'Cause I think that you can provide a perspective that I think a lot, like pretty deeply about life pretty frequently. And, just all my experiences. And you're somebody who I was excited to talk to about all of this, because I think that you can offer a perspective to not only myself, but to, you know, your fans or anybody who, you know, listens to anything that you're involved with, that can really help them look at something differently. Yeah.
Yeah. And, not to do a shameless plug or anything on my new record.
Yeah. Go
but,
ahead.
But, that's kind of like what it was about, really, is just to share other people's stories, you know, and really try and, I don't know, and embrace empathy. 'Cause I know I did I lose you?
Yeah. I lost the picture, but they were cool.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. that was kind of the idea behind our new record, was to have empathy, to step into other people's shoes, and to try and see, you know, the world through their eyes and their experiences. And I think that's a really great thing. And I'm glad that you're doing that here, you know, with these podcasts and stuff. I think that's really great.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people may benefit from that, like just trying to listen, you know, to other people and to try and understand. I think that'll help a lot.
Yeah. And I know that you said, you know, shameless plug, but I think that what you guys did with the style that you approach this record with is the epitome of selflessness, you know, like you're putting somebody's story into your art, which is, I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that's, because, yeah, you know, a lot of it can just be about, you know, because I write a lot about my life personally, because, you know, I always kind of think about it in the way of, like, you know, a lot of bands, you know, they write about, you know, like politics or whatever, and that's totally fine. You know, do your thing. Mm-hmm. But I know my life story the best, and that's what I can tell really the best. So it's for you guys to approach this record telling other people's stories is, I mean, that's not only difficult, but to portray that, especially in this style of music, is awesome.
Yeah, it was really hard. I think the hardest part was just doing the story and the person justice. So it was like, I really got to make sure I get this right. And I don't want to just like try and, oh, I got the night off of work. All right, I'm going to finish this song. Here we go. Like, it was more about taking the time and asking the right questions and getting all the resources, whether it's reading a book, watching a movie, or, you know, like for The War That Followed Me Home, for example, like trying to, you know, gather these military stories and hearing all these other, you know, perspectives on war and trauma, but then also like going back to my friend and asking him questions and really understanding his story, just trying to gather as much as I can, you know, like really get into their shoes and trying to get in their head to feel them out. I think that taught me a lot about life. I mean, just being a better person instead of just being like, oh, that sucks, man. Like, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. And then you just go about your day, like, can't wait to get on Xbox Live tonight. You know, like, it taught me a lot, you know? Like,
no, it's true, man. It is.
You know, like when I'm at work and someone tells me something, I have this bad habit of just like having selective hearing where I'm just like, oh, that sucks, man. Like, okay. You know, instead of like really being like, what would I feel if I were in this person's shoe, you know, or what would, you know, and that's a big part of why I wanted to do this, this EP, this record, this whole concept. I really just wanted to try and not just myself, my bandmates helped and they wrote their songs too, but really challenge myself here.
Yeah. Cause that's what I was going to ask you. Well, like, what was something that you learned, in this process? Because, you know, obviously you're writing it for other people's stories. Like, what was something that you kind of learned about yourself, either positive or negative? Maybe it was what you had just mentioned about kind of the selective hearing, whereas probably now, like if somebody tells you a story, you're going to be like more of like, oh, I'm going to be much more receptive to hear this person out rather than just being like, oh man, that sucks, but I gotta go, bye. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway probably was just like a big empathy exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Just to like, yeah, just trying to see things like through other people's eyes. That was probably my biggest takeaway, maybe. Mm-hmm. But as a writer, for sure, like understanding, like having an arc and a dynamic and like a like lyrically having like a trying to tell a full story in 3 minutes is really hard. And like trying to, you know, like there's a lot of like technical things I learned, you know, and big tip of the hat to our producer. Like he really, you know, helped a lot in that aspect. But yeah, as a writer, I learned a lot and now I'm really excited to write more songs and tackle new, you know, ways of doing that. But yeah, I think for me as a person in growing, definitely empathy and grief, learning about grief and healing. I haven't had a suicide in my family or like close group of friends. And I don't know, I didn't know like exactly what that would do. And seeing one of my close friends and how it affected him losing his best friends, like that really, really put a lot in perspective. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no, it was every song really had its own little, you know, effect on me.
Yeah. Was there, I guess, you know, that one song when you're in the studio where you're listening to it and you're kind of going through the motions, maybe, you know, you listen to the demo and then it's coming together and you're like, yeah, like this is the one, like, this is the one that I really gravitate towards the most. What was there any one like that for you? Like whether it was, you know, not even just the story, but even just sonically where you're like, man, like I can really, this is for me. Like, I love this.
Yeah. Probably The Price of Grace. That was one of the last songs I recorded.
Oh, okay.
so me, like, as a vocalist, I've been trying to get better, and I'm, you know, I'm sure you are too. We all are. Yeah. But I, during COVID, it was just a lot of practicing and finding new techniques. So like, that was like the freshest song I've recorded. And, I was able to try new things, and that was like good for me, but also, for this release, I really wanted to do like almost like method acting. Yeah. You put yourself in the role and kind of live it out, and then what would it sound like if you recorded it? So there was parts where that song where, like there's a lyric where I say like, they found the note you left behind in the lethal dose you took that night. When I was recording it, I was gritting my teeth and like trying to scream through it. And you can hear like spit, and like, I can hear it when I listen to it. And to me, I was like, this feels like I'm really like, I'm actually in this moment and I'm angry. And it feels like, oh my gosh, like it's not even like I'm singing anymore. I'm just there. And it was really cool for me. And I've heard some really cool stories from other bands and art, like vocalists that do stuff like that. Like, there's a hardcore vocalist that did bear mace in his face. And so he's like actually in agony when he's screaming for a bear.
I don't recommend anybody going that far.
I'm really going to try and be in this instead of just being like nailing my takes, you know?
Yeah. Like that was a sick take next.
Yeah, I did it. You know, and I have, I feel like a bad habit of mine is just nailing the take and tone instead of actually like thinking about the words and like being in it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, because there's a lot more to it than just, all right, this section I'll do a low, and this one I'll do a high, and this one is, you know, there is, I think that when you can put that passion into the line and have it make sense tonally, like whatever comes out, like whatever you're feeling, like that's it. It's not like, oh, sick mid there, Mike. That was awesome. You know, on that line where you said you left the note, sick mid, bro. Like it was, you know what I mean? It's just, that's what I noticed firsthand with this EP, like just listening to it through. I was like, man, like these are like very raw emotional vocals. Like it's not, and I think a lot of times what happens, because believe me, you just look at any of our songs, look at the YouTube comments. They're all vocal experts out there. There's a lot of vocal experts out there. But, you know, there's just so much more to it than just trying to nail the low and try to nail the high and maximize the low end or the high end. So that's really cool, though. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to that, circles back to the whole authentic sound, you know, like instead of like if you and I were getting in a fight, I'm not going to be like, you know, I'm gonna yell at you, man.
Like do a Franz rap vocal, right? You know, like
right. Yeah, I'm not gonna do that. Like, I'm actually just gonna yell at you. So this is what it would sound like. It's more,
logic. Like being, it's logically approaching it. Yeah,
yeah, and that was kind of like another thing too is, being heavy on purpose. Right. Like that I think is really important for our band. Is like there's a reason to be heavy. It's not just for the sake of just whatever, you know.
Right. It sounds like just listening to you talk, man, about like, you know, just the way that you approach music and the stuff that you're into, you're not really like a metalcore kid. I mean, that's kind of the vibe that I'm kind of getting, is that you're not really like, yeah, man, I grew up, I listened to As It Lay Dying, like I loved all these metalcore bands and I wanted to start a metalcore band. It seems like you kind of
just... I did all those things.
Okay, well, fair.
Yeah, I know, I'm a metalcore historian.
Okay. Hey, why is deathcore a historian over here? But, no, okay, well, fair enough, because I was just going to ask, because, you know, I know that you mentioned you listen to a lot of the top 40 stuff now, and then, you know, you mentioned Slipknot, and I just didn't know if you kind of by accident fell into metalcore.
No. I've been at this for a long time, man. notable influences would be like It Dies Today, which is like that was like that and As Lay Dying were definitely like some of the and Norma Jean, like those earlier definitely big influences for sure in the early years. But I mean, even as a kid, like I liked alternative rock. Like my dad was like having me listen to like Nirvana and The Offspring. Stuff like that. So I've always been more on the alternative spectrum. I'm a skateboarder, so like extreme sports and BMX, and like, so it was counterculture was always kind of a present thing in my life. So no, I've been in the metalcore game for a while. Okay.
No, I knew that, but I just mean, I meant, I guess, from the time
how I look at it,
from the time you entered Convictions, I just didn't know if before then you were like, yeah, Slipknot, like, I love this stuff. And then like, you kind of got into the metalcore game, like you, like not even, not the metalcore game, but like the metalcore soundscape from there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I really want to like emphasize, I do not want to sound pretentious here, but
hold on.
But I want, I, and I know you do too. Like you guys, you sound very authentic. You want to contribute something. You know, you don't want to just emulate something.
Right.
So, yeah, trying to look at things different and offer something fresh is really important. And as you know, as we grow as writers and lyricists and stuff, it's important to flesh that out and grow and you know, and think differently. You gotta stand out in some way, you know?
Right.
So.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, my apologies for assuming. I apologize.
Yeah. Excuse me, sir.
Yeah. Well, because I'm kind of interested now, because obviously this is probably just really kind of going into the weeds here, but the Instagram is Convictions Rock, but a lot of people be like, well, it's metal.
It's not rock band.
What do you mean rock band? What's going on here? So what kind of inspired, cause I know that you know, you have the, you know, the tagline aggressive worship, which is by far, I mean, that's an, number one, I got to say that tagline and the name Convictions are absolutely perfect for like what style that you guys are going for. Yeah.
Yeah. That was all established before I was even in that band, in the band. They had put out an EP called I Am Nothing. Before I joined, so this is like 2012, and they had Convictions and Regressive Worship, Emotion Captured Noise, all the monikers, everything was already established. Wow. And I ironically I don't want to take up too much time here, but I found out about Convictions when I was working at the mall, and their old member approached me, and we caught up, and he was like, yeah, I'm starting to spin Convictions. And it's going to be like really stripped down, like bare bones, like to the point Christian metalcore. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And that word Convictions is really cool. And then I ended up using the word Convictions in my old band's lyrics simply because I heard someone say it, and that was the old member of Convictions. So I was like, that's, so it was always kind of in my brain. But I guess to answer your question about Convictions Rock, that's I would probably give that to Josh. He probably put that together. He's like the ambient, he's our guitar player. Mm. He's in all that stuff. He plays a telly, you know, he's like he has this whole like hipster side of him where he's all about like, I'm not gonna play Schecters and like metal looking guitars, I'm gonna play like Telecasters, and like he's cool. So yeah, I think that's probably what. It's like, we're a metal band, but it's like, we don't want to be a metal band. So it's that kind of dynamic I think he was getting at.
Well, I mean, I know that you maybe not want to be a metal band, but Teeth was, we kind of have this like kind of, it's a kind of a meme at this point within, you know, like what we do with the reaction videos and whatnot, but we call different songs Richard Core. And that's just like, I'm really like, you know, I love like the Amure, just like the boom, boom, boom style stuff. And like Teeth was, I was like, this is like written for me. This is Richard Core. I mean, this is written for me. So it's just really funny that you mentioned, you know, your guitar player there, who sounds a lot like our bass player, who listens to what I like to call coffee house music. And I joke with him sometimes. I'm like, listen, man, the guarantees, Adam and I will get the guarantees. We'll pay you in bagels, you know, we'll pay you an organic bagel, you know, it's just all that kind of funny hipster joke stuff. That's really funny though, that you mentioned that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He'd probably get along. I mean, Josh is cool. And like, he listens to everything, but yeah, he always has some obscure, you know, like fusion indie instrumental band that he's throwing at us. Like, they're crazy names too, like This Will Destroy You, Russian Circles, Explosions in the Sky, like, which are all phenomenal bands, by the way, but stuff like that. And I'm like, what are you, like, are you just trying to impress me, or are you like really into this, you know? And yeah, he's, you know, he's cool, man. But yeah, every now and then I'll throw the Richard core at him. I'm like, dude, like, I just, let's just make something super heavy, man. Like, can it just be heavy?
Dude, that's so funny you say that, because like, I don't know what it must be a guitar player thing, because every vocalist I've had on here, we always talk about the guitar players, because we're like, you know, they want to just, you know, noodle around, and like, you know, they just want to, you know, they want to use their chops, and I get that, but how about we just go bang, 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 you know, let's just,
yeah,
just down tuned, heavy, and I don't know what tuning you guys were in on Teeth, but I mean, and I want to know what that explosion thing was too. I don't know what that was, but it was like, after your first line, it just went, but like there was like that explosion,
like impact.
Yeah, well,
yeah, that's all that? Andrew. Yeah, that's Andrew Wade. He's got a whole secret producer thing to that. But yeah, it's impacts.
It sounded like he sampled an atom bomb. I mean, I don't know. It was crazy. Yeah.
There was definitely a lot of discussions like that where we're recording and we're like, not crazy enough. Like, not crazy enough. You know, like, especially with Josh and all his like wahs and like crazy pedal work where, you know, wah! And all those like weird noises. We're like, it's got to be crazier. And like, we were like, more bass drops, more bass drop, more impacts, like more. And I'm like, once you think it's too much, we have to go a little bit further. Like, that was kind of like the mindset for some of these songs, but like on purpose, of course. But yeah, like it's just kind of like, it needs more Richard core. We just have to put that
Now you're getting into, see, the Richard core, because it's what we have, like all of our, you know, our own playlist on Spotify, Richard core, Adam core, Derek core. Like, we just have those. And Derek's are like, I don't even know what's on. I mean, some of that stuff, I'm like, what is this? But I'm like, but no, I just, like, the other thing too, the other track that I really flocked to a lot was The War That Followed Me Home, which was, I guess, you know, kind of the, it wasn't the boom. I mean, it went boom, boom, but it was, you know, a little bit more of the metalcore boom, not just like the boom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There was definitely industrial, at least from what I know, there's like, more metallic sounds, like metal, like you'd hear like maybe on a battlefield. And there's a part where everything drops after when I brace for the impact, and then it's like we tried to make a actual bomb hitting sound, like an explosion, like a fire explosion. And then after that, the ringing, like when the smoke clears and the bodies appear, like you hear ringing, because that was what you'd hear if you had like shell shock and you were like, you know. It's just like that. So it's like we're trying to be more cinematic, I guess, with all that stuff. And there's also, I'm pretty sure it's in the song, but I can't say for sure because I wasn't there when they were mixing. But I definitely was there when they pulled the sample of a pod racer from Star Wars. If you watch the pod race, there's a scene where I think it's Sebulba when he flies by, and his pod racer, the engine, it's like, and it goes by, and that's always stuck with me. And there's a song from Architects off of their Hollow Crown record, which is one of my favorites. Big throwback. Most people don't know about it now.
Okay, I was going to say, maybe you are a metalcore historian. Okay, maybe.
Yeah, there's a song on there called Early Grave, which is one of my favorites. And their guitar players at some point are so low and chuggy that it sounds like a pod racer. It's just, and I'm like, that sounds like a pod racer. And I was like, we should use that. We should use a pod racer in our song. And I was there when the intern was pulling it off of YouTube. And then we had the sample. And I'm pretty sure it's in the song, but there's definitely a part in the song where you hear, and I'm like, I think that's the pod racer.
Yeah, I love that. No, I thought, no, you guys definitely with The War That Followed Me Home, definitely a lot of that cinematic feel, even just little things like with the music video, you know, it's like silent, and then you just drop in like a couple seconds into it. I thought that was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
No, not even that. I mean, like the very beginning of the video where it's just silent and
you're all tensed up.
Yeah, you're gripping the microphone and you're just like, wow. And then you just go, I was like, oh, okay, here we go.
Yeah, that was Dan's idea for sure. It was more of like he wanted to have like a found footage thing. So it's like a camera may have fallen on the battlefield and then they pick it up and we're there standing. So that was kind of the idea.
That's cool. Yeah. I loved that I guess the one of those, I don't even know if you call it a break. I guess you would, but where you were like, I think the lyric is my knees collapse and I brace for the impact. And it's just like,
I was just that's that fiery explosion sound. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely drove by crowds of people playing that. You know, I had to let them know. You know what I mean? But no, man, I was just so enthralled with this record. But I also wanted to ask you because, again, I don't know how many Christian metalcore bands are left out there, or how many opportunities I'll get. So I just wanted to ask you some things about that scene. And I don't want to talk too much of your time. These tend to go on for a while because I never shut up. I mean, let's be honest. But what is something? Why do you think there is, I guess, a stigma attached to this? You know, Christian metalcore, or why it's not as prominent as it? You know what I mean? Like I feel like. Go ahead. Yeah.
That's a tricky question.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the Christian metalcore scene when it was probably in its heyday with like Cornerstone Fest and, you know, those bigger Solid State, Tooth and Nail, you know, that when it was like a category on MySpace, you just click Christian, you know, like it was everywhere. And that was really influential in my earlier years. Now, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak on those bands. I don't know like why maybe it's like dying out in a way, or that we're like one of the last ones now. It doesn't really affect us. Like we will not be Convictions if we're not Convictions. I mean, I'm sorry. We will not be Convictions if we're not Christian. Like we can't do that. It's what it we are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe a lot of those bands, if I could add any bit to it, would probably be maybe some of the unrealistic expectations that come with it. Like, dude, I saw your guitar player drinking a beer. You're not Christian, you know, like stuff like that, where it's like, what do you, you know, and then it, after a while, maybe it gets to some of these bands. This is a speculation, but right. I know most of our really tough criticism comes from just other Christians, ironically, not non-Christians, just because of the way that maybe they view their faith and how it should be upheld. And you get a lot of, sometimes bands will get scrutiny or, you know, they will, have this unrealistic expectation to live up to, and maybe it just collapses on itself. This is just speculation, I've seen a little bit of it with our band, just some of the people that are like, well, you sure has an upside down cross, so you were devil worshippers. And it's like, you don't get it. You know, like that
some
is not
hard, some hardcore. Yeah.
And at that point, some of these people you just can't argue with. You know, you just got to kind of say, you know, I'm sorry, that's how you feel. Wish you all the best, you know, but no, like we're going to keep doing what we're doing here. I don't know. That's my guess. And I'm probably right. But
Just from the outside looking in, like I know that one band who maybe was considered Christian metalcore, but maybe they have kind of gone away from that subset of metalcore, whatever, Fit for a King, you know, who I don't know. I know that they all are Christian, but I don't know if they're like, yeah, we're a Christian metalcore band. I don't know if that's what they do anymore, but I know that Tuck, the bass player for the band, he manages this band called Left to Suffer, and he shared a clip of one of their music videos where it was not exactly a Christian lyric. I'll put it that way. And so, you know, they got some flack. He got some flack for just sharing that for a band that he manages. And I could definitely see that could be part of the dynamic of being a Christian metalcore band, is that even though you feel like you're carrying out that moniker, if you will, there's always probably going to be somebody else who you're not necessarily upholding that message to. You know what I mean? But and you guys are from Ohio too, correct?
I'm the only person that lives in Ohio right now, but like this is where we formed and what we say is our hometown.
And you guys kind of came up during a time where, I mean, Ohio was pretty popping back in the day. I mean, let's
still is. This is definitely like the Rise Records hub. Like, I feel like that, at least. Like, every band was just coming out of like this area. So yeah, and that probably, whether we know it or not, probably influenced a lot of our sound.
Mm-hmm.
For being from Ohio, for sure. But the Christian thing, I don't know. I mean, we all, I didn't grow up with my bandmates, and they lived in a rural area. So I'm assuming just the culture in rural Ohio is very traditional Christian homes and stuff. So that was probably a bit of their background.
All right. Well, I'll get you out of here on a lighter note. I think this will be pretty funny. I'm sure that in being a Christian metalcore band, you've probably found yourself playing some interesting festivals or shows where you probably don't necessarily sound similar to the other Christian acts on the bill.
Oh, yeah.
So I just wanted to hear a story or two about those that I'm sure that people are probably like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody's uncomfortable, it's probably just us, because we're like, nobody sounds like we're really heavy, and there's like, this is like a family festival, so there's like little kids on their bikes like riding by, and we're just, you know,
right.
But ironically enough, like a lot of these festivals, people are just so nice and so on board, even good. If they don't look like they like what we play, they're like really cool. That's been like my biggest eye opener. Takeaway. I'm like, wow, like these people are really cool and don't like they like our music, but they're like very supportive. So
that's awesome. Oh, you take like some people's face to be like,
oh yeah, no, that happens for sure. A lot of times that happens. But no, it's for the most part pretty good. The only like probably the weirder places we played are like I guess I'll give you one.
Yeah.
We played a actual satanic biker bar, not it's cool,
like a legit,
ironically like, oh, we have pentagrams because we like metal and we're bikers. No, like it was
legit. This is gonna be a good story. This is a good story.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it short. It was like in the deep swamps area of like Louisiana or so. We were in the cuts, and it was sketchy even getting there. I feel like we were on like dirt roads and like backwoods, and we get to this biker bar, and there's a statue of I don't know the name,
Baphomet.
So yeah, the whole goat head body, human body, like it was a statue, and there was like murals, and it was like a literal satanic worship place. And we're like, they know we're Christian, right? And the weirdest, probably biggest eye opener was how nice everybody was. So they're like very accommodating. They let me do my Christian speech on stage, and they let me set up, you know, like they were really cool for the most part. And I was like, dang, man, like some of these churches we hear about are like super judgmental and like won't let non-Christians like come through. And here we are. And it's, you know, it was just kind of like, what, like, I could learn something, you know, but I gotta be careful like what I'm learning, but like I could take something away from this that's kind of like, wow, like they, you know.
Who were you playing that show with? Now I'm curious as to who that
was. Like, I don't remember. I think it was a one-off. Like, we were like on, it was like an off day, so we picked up a show. Maybe we were out with some of our friends. It was one of our first tours. They're called You the Few. Really cool. Really cool people. And yeah, it was just kind of like a one-off show, and it ended up being, and I think another tour somehow crossed through that too. So it was like maybe like seven bands played or something, but it was like all bikers. There wasn't really like normal, you know, like people in the scene there. It was just like bikers, and there's yeah. And it was cool.
Man, that is that alone, that could be a Netflix series. I mean, geez, that well, it must have been pretty interesting to see some people, you know, that obviously identify with the, I don't even know what you would, I don't want to,
yeah,
I don't know.
We did see one guy though convert and like accept Jesus that night though. That was, and he was like in leather vest, like big beard, old, like the real deal biker, if you would imagine one, you know, in like full tears, like crying and praying with these women that they're like female fronted and they were praying with them. And it was just like the weirdest thing to see. Cause we're like in the swamp backwoods area. And we're like on this like patio thing to the side of the bar venue or something. It's like backstage. There's like bikes everywhere. And they're just praying with this big man. And he's just crying. And it was just like, wow. You know,
that's yeah, crazy. Like,
right. Yeah. It's pretty incredible what God can do,
man. Well, listen, man, I think that's a really great place to call it here, and definitely want to be respectful of your time, but nah, man, I had a really good time talking to you. I appreciate you letting me kind of talk to you about my experiences with everything, and
yeah, thanks for sharing
yours.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. And you know, I hope that we are able to cross paths again here when the world allows, you know, but no, man, I'm stoked. And everybody out there, I mean, listen, I really, really recommend listening to Conviction's new EP, I Won't Survive. My personal favorite track is Teeth, but you know, there's a lot of really compelling lyricism here and probably a lot of stories that you can identify with in some way, shape or form, whether it's your own personal experience or maybe a friend's experience or whatever. And I'm sure that it'll hit differently for each and every person, but definitely go listen to it. It actually just came out at the time of this recording. It came out yesterday. So I appreciate you, Mike, taking time out of your busy schedule, especially the day after the release, to be on here with me today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the True Shot Guest Spot Podcast. If you are watching this on YouTube, please leave us a like, comment, subscribe, turn on the notification bell, all that good stuff. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review, 5 stars, please. And if you're on Spotify, make sure you follow the podcast and also share this on your Instagram story and tag me, tag Michael, tag Convictions, tag whoever, just tag somebody. And if you want to go even further than that, you can go and follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TrueShotOfficial or join our Patreon where tiers start as low as $1. That's patreon.com/TrueShotOfficial. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll see you in the next podcast. I should say also thanks for listening. I mean, because if you're not watching, then you're listening. So we'll go with that. Okay, bye.